Just recently, I was reading a story of a youth minister and his brother who were playing a round of golf. And if you've ever played at all, you know that oftentimes, if there's just two of you at the clubhouse and it's a busy day, they pair you with two others, often strangers, to make a foursome to get enough people on the course at the same time. And he made the comment that not too long after they had begun playing, that from these two strangers, a lot of bad words began to fly back and forth. And that also they began discussing some really inappropriate topics between them. Well, this went on for a little while, and then at some point in the round, the conversation turned to careers. And so the guy whose article I was reading announced that he was a youth minister. The one with the dirtiest mouth responded, "Oh, sorry, I will watch my language." He went on to explain that he found that really interesting. Up until that point, the man had had absolutely no hesitation, no care what he was saying. He didn't care who was present. He didn't care what they thought of his language. So why all of a sudden did this man suddenly feel the need to watch his words? Was the question this guy was answering or asking. And so it leads to a couple of observations, not only about the guy playing golf that day, but about society in general. And then certainly we can apply it to us. Number one, this guy knew that his language was offensive. He knew that it was morally wrong. Why else apologize? Why else feel the need to all of a sudden refrain from such language, to refrain from such stories just because an individual with a particular profession happened to be present? What that indicates is that deep down, he understood that there are certain things that God disapproves of. God has placed within us, until we have it mistaught to the point that it can no longer be pricked, God has placed within mankind, within humanity as a whole, a conscience, a standard of morality that is supposed to guide our decision-making process, that is supposed to help us control our actions, control our thoughts, control our speech. Romans chapter 2, starting in verse 14, Paul writes, "When the Gentiles who do not have the law do instinctively the things of the law," these, in reference to the Gentiles, not having the law, are a law to themselves, "in that they show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience bearing witness, their thoughts alternately accusing or else defending them, on the day when, according to my gospel, God will judge the secrets of men through Christ Jesus." You know, we go back to the Old Testament and we begin to read in Exodus when the law is given at the mountain, and we read Leviticus and we read the second giving of the law in Deuteronomy, and we think in global terms. And yet remember, this is a very specific story written about a very specific group of people. This is for God's nation. Those laws are given specifically to Israel. And so we get to Romans and we find out that the Gentiles outside of that had a moral law, had a conscience that God had given them to direct them, to remind them that certain things are wrong, even if God has not told us directly. Good example. You know, you go all the way back nearly to the beginning. Cain kills Abel and God approaches Cain. Where's your brother? And notice Cain knows that he has done something morally unacceptable because he doesn't fess up. He doesn't just throw it out there. He's laying over there under the tree dead. We know. We have an understanding. The Gentiles had an understanding. Deep down, most people know what is ethically right and wrong. That leads to several conclusions. It means, number one, our world is still reachable. It may not always look like it out there with what's going on, but there is some standard that is innate to humanity that we can key on, that we can reach towards and try to get them to understand that there's more to it than that. Here's the problem, though. Often that moral code is suppressed because of our desires. That's supposed to say selfish. I have no idea why it says special. And I still have no idea. That doesn't make any sense at all. It's supposed to say our selfish desires. The point, we know. We know what we're supposed to do. And we just don't do it because we want to do something else. We want to think another way. We want to act another way. 1 John chapter 2, we've fallen in love with the world. We do things that we know to be wrong until somebody else holds us to a higher standard because we want to do them. Number two, second observation about the guy in this golf foursome. He wanted to put on a good front. Now, he didn't have any care in the world about the way he was acting, the things he was saying, until he thought there was someone there that might expect better behavior of him. So as soon as he knew that there was a minister of some kind around, he felt the need to act better than he actually was. Have you ever had anybody apologize for their language when they realized who you are? Do they think I'm a watchdog? Do they think that you're a reporting agent for God? Do they think God missed the behavior until you heard it? No matter what was going through his mind, he had simply decided that since the youth minister was there, he was going to appear better. Let's go back to where we were for a moment this morning in Matthew chapter 6. I just referenced it. We're going to read it this time. Beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven. When therefore you give alms, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogue and in the streets, that they may be honored by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. When you give alms, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your alms may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will repay you. When you pray, you are not to be as the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogue and on the street corners in order to be seen by men. Truly I say to you, they have their reward in full. When you pray, go in your inner room, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will repay you. So Jesus is pointing out a group of people in his society who have their ducks in a row. They're doing the right things, but they're doing them for the wrong reason. They're doing them to put on a front, to act like they're better than they are. And Jesus is condemning it. You know, we also read this morning from chapter 15 in the same book in verses 8 and 9. These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They're putting on a show. What's he talking about? He says, hey, you know, you say do this, but you're doing something else. You're supposed to be taking care of your parents, but you're going to change the rules. And so on and so forth. Don't put on a front, he said. It's not going to do any good. God's not going to be fooled by it. And ultimately, the world's not going to be fooled by it. Question for you. If God is always in the audience, he's everywhere, he knows everything, he sees everything, what difference does it make who else is present? It really doesn't. I have the same standard with God in the audience at home, on the road, on the golf course, on the ball field, on the court, that I have here. Because you see, God's still the audience. God's still the standard. God's still the one who sets the bar for morality. Putting up a front is just that. It's just putting up a front. It's trying to be something I'm not. It's pretending to be someone I'm not. I would argue that, at least in a sense, it really doesn't matter who else is around. The standard's still the standard. Be who you are. Number three, this man was reminded by the fact that there was a Christian in his group that God expects different behavior. We are not necessarily the standard in this world, but we are a constant reminder to this world that God expects us to be different. Just learning the occupation of one of his playing companions produced at least a momentary change in behavior. He knew what he was doing was not right. He knew there were certain people that didn't act that way. And he was going to at least try for the moment to respect that. Meaning that he knew God is pure and that God frowns on that kind of behavior. He knew at some level that God expects better. Now then, I doubt seriously the encounter made any lasting change in his life. But it is a reminder that God holds us, humanity as a whole, not just the church, God holds humanity to a higher standard than we live to at times. That we're smart enough, and it's ingrained in us enough to know that God expects better of us. We look around our world, and sometimes it looks like that God has been completely pushed out of our society. But I would argue that even in our depraved society, that most still hold to some level of respect for God and inner morality, especially if there's someone there that they feel will hold them to that. Romans chapter 1. Starting in verse 18, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Why do they have to suppress it? Because verse 19, that which is known about God is evident within them. For God made it evident to them. Since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. Notice verse 18, to act the way they act in the world, they have to suppress righteousness. They have to suppress what is God-given from the very beginning. Notice verse 19, God has made certain things evident to us that we cannot miss unless we attempt to miss them. And then in verse 20, he made certain attributes about himself entirely knowable to us so that we're without excuse. Again, evidence. Have you ever noticed how maybe in your everyday normal life, someone with whom you work, someone with whom you interact in one way or another, can be the foulest human being that you've ever been around until the boss walks in, or until a dignitary walks in, or until maybe a lady walks in that he doesn't know where he wants to impress, or he has to show up at the funeral of someone. Notice how the behavior changes when they walk through the threshold of certain buildings. It's ingrained in us. We know better. So here's the thought tonight. Number one, we should be the same. We are even held to a higher standard than the world. And so we should be the same regardless where we are. Regardless who's listening, regardless who's watching. We don't have to be introduced to so-and-so as having this profession or that profession. Our behavior is to be excellent all the time. We're not even to give the Gentiles or the world an opportunity to look down on us or say anything negative about us. Number two, we're to stand for that higher standard. We don't have to put up with the moral depravity of the world around us. We have the right to speak up and say, don't talk like that around me. Don't behave like that. Don't repeat those things in front of me, in front of my children, in front of my spouse. And we're to do it all the time, in all situations, in front of all people. You know, there's a story that Paul relates to us in the book of Galatians about Peter. Peter is the rock. Peter is this leader in the church. Peter is this guy who's willing to stand up on Pentecost. He's the guy who's going to die for Jesus. But when some of the Jews from Jerusalem showed up, Peter felt like, you know, they might not appreciate me sitting with the Gentiles. And so he allowed the pressure of the people around him to change his behavior. So he got up and moved. Paul said, I had to call him on it. I had to confront him to his face. Why? We're the light of the world. We're the standard bearers. We cannot let the pressure of the people around us, just because they do not act right, change the way we act. And we can't fluctuate with the tide. Matthew 5, 14 through 16, we're the light of the world. We're the salt of the earth. We're different. And so we're supposed to be examples of how true followers of God speak. And do we always get it right? No. We're so human. We're so frail. I don't get it right all the time. But the challenge is that the norm is to get it right. And the stumbles are the abnormal parts of my life. Colossians 3 and verse 9, and specifically in reference to our speech, we're to eliminate that abusive speech. So, yeah, like the guy in the street, I'm going to watch my words. I'm going to watch my language, but I'm not going to watch it just because one person is there. I'm going to watch it all the time, everywhere, because God's always there. The song we're about to sing is All to Jesus I Surrender. That means all. It means every area of my life, in every situation, at all times, and in front of all witnesses. Can you sing that song and mean it? If not, come to the cross. Come and give your life totally, to surrender it all, and be the change that you need this world to be and that God needs it to be. So we stand and sing.